It was a Sunday night in Detroit. I was tired. It had been a long and somewhat demanding day, and I was anxious to get home. I boarded the Boeing 757 and was seated in the coach section right near the door, the main entrance to that aircraft. And although in coach, I was able to see well into the first class cabin and hear what was going on there. There was a first class passenger who stopped the flight attendant as she was walking back toward the door to prepare the plane for takeoff. He stopped her and instructed her briefly, concisely, but rather severely to immediately get him a drink. She told him that she had something else that she had to do and asked that he wait and she would get back to him when she could. He then, becoming increasingly loud and obnoxious and profane, explained that he had paid $100 more than us in the back and that he expected to get his free drinks when he wanted them, not when she got around to him. And the conversation went on briefly, and the belligerence level on his part increased, although she remained, to my judgment, amazingly cool. She then walked back out of the first class cabin, past me, and took what for her was a right, and went out to where the agent was, and talked to the agent who was on the jetway. Let me just say, I had a great seat. Great seat for all this. And she said, we've got a first-class passenger, and I want him off this plane. So the agent came back in and went up to this first-class guy. That refers to the cabin that he was in, not the quality of the person, and suggested that he immediately gather up his belongings because he would not be taking that particular flight to Minneapolis that night. In fact, it was explained to him, I could hear, I mean, I wasn't really listening, but that he not only wouldn't be going on that flight, he wouldn't be going on that airline, and since that was the last flight out that night, he wouldn't even be going that day. He would have to wait until Monday morning. Now, the Bible has a name for this guy and a verse, a proverb made specially for him, and it's in Proverbs 29:11, which says, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. There are a lot of fools who vent a lot of anger these days. Now, if you'd like to see one, drive home on the crosstown this morning, and you will find that if you drive just at 55 or a little bit slower, or if you're not in what other drivers consider to be the appropriate lane at the appropriate time, they will become greatly displeased and will vent a great deal of hostility towards you in the way that they drive their cars. Or you can hear it with your coworkers this week at work, especially if you listen for it. You will hear that if they are crossed or things don't go as they would choose for them to go, that they may vent a great deal of anger, perhaps toward you, certainly toward others. I think it is especially present in families where sometimes over many, many years, the skill of frustrating other family members has been honed to a high level until with a glance or with a word or sometimes with doing nothing at all, anger can be evoked or anger can be expressed. It's even seen in churches. Sad to say, but seen in churches where longtime Christians can become very, very angry simply because things don't go exactly as they think they ought to go. So that I believe that anger has become something of an epidemic emotion in America in 1989. That's because so many people want things done their way, and that's the only way that they will accept for them to be done. My way. My way can cover just about everything and can relate to just about everyone until anger results. Anger with parents, I mean anger from people who are fully grown, toward their parents because they didn't raise them right. Or anger toward the government for not governing them right. Or anger toward a husband or a wife for not treating them right. Or anger toward the boss for not paying them right. Or anger toward God. There's a lot of anger toward God. Because God didn't answer the prayer the way the prayer was supposed to be answered. Because God didn't come through when he was expected to come through. Because God did it his way instead of doing it my way. The result is lots and lots of very angry people out there. And not just angry, but expressing that anger, giving it full vent. So I think that if there is any proverb that is particularly a practical proverb for 1989, it is this proverb of chapter 29 and verse 11. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. There are four key terms which help us to understand what this proverb teaches. But first, let's understand something about proverbs. Proverbs are concise and memorable statements of practical wisdom. And that's the understanding term, wisdom. In fact, proverbs are included in what the Hebrews would call their part of the Old Testament wisdom literature. Wisdom literature includes Job and Ecclesiastes, but most notably includes the book that has the name, Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs doesn't read like a story, like other parts of the Bible, nor does it read as a didactic document, a teaching thing that spells out theology or anything like that. It reads more like the telephone book, where there's a list of all kinds of information, very valuable and very significant. But particularly, the wisdom literature and the Proverbs in particular give practical advice on how to live, the art of living. It should not be confused with doctrinal teachings of Scripture, for there really is not a great deal of doctrine in the traditional sense in the book of Proverbs. Nor should it be confused with prophetic literature when something is stated in the future tense in the book of Proverbs. That is not prophecy in the same sense of predictive prophecy elsewhere within the New Testament or the Old, but rather is simply God telling us how to successfully live. It is God explaining the art of living, understanding that life can be tough, and that he wants us, up against the toughness of life, to be wise and to be strong. Now, with that understanding, let's look at this particular proverb of chapter 29 and verse 11, and the first of those four key terms, which is fool. Much of the book of Proverbs contrasts the fool with the wise person. And in every case, the fool is the person who lacks basic understanding of life and of reality, and therefore really doesn't know what it takes to live successfully. Doesn't have the information, doesn't have the skills in order to handle life. Meaning that the fool is really something of an ignorant person. Not to say that he or she is not well educated nor intelligent, because the fool may be very highly educated and may be very intelligent. He or she doesn't know about the art of living. Even though the fool often thinks that he knows. In fact, the fool, as presented in the book of Proverbs, is frequently portrayed as someone who's very proud, very confident. Confident isn't even strong enough a word, even arrogant. But all of this is really just a veneer covering up a person who is uninformed and a person who often, on the inside, is very weak, sometimes is tragically sad. Let me give you a couple of examples. Proverbs 13:16 says, "Every prudent man acts out of knowledge, but a fool exposes his folly." Or Proverbs 15:7, "The lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the hearts of fools." But the worst part of the fool is not ignorance. The worst part of the fool is an unwillingness to learn. The fool is the kind of person who is always sure he's right, even though he is absolutely wrong. In fact, you can show him he's absolutely wrong, and he's still convinced he's absolutely right. Proverbs 14:12 says, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death." Absolutely convinced, but she's a fool, and so it's terminal. It leads to death. Or Proverbs 10:23, "A fool finds pleasure in evil conduct." So the fool is not only someone who does evil because the fool behaves on the basis of misinformation and false confidence, but the fool is someone who enjoys doing it, who does what's wrong and takes a pleasure in it. Or Proverbs 15:21, "Folly delights a man who lacks judgment." So the fool gets great satisfaction out of his own lack of wisdom. There is an especially interesting picture that is portrayed in Proverbs chapter 17. And if you want to imagine it, sort of imagine a one-room schoolhouse where wisdom is going to be taught. And there are people who are lined up outside because it's a private school and they have to register and they have to pay the tuition in order to get in. And the fool is standing in the line with a handful of cash, more than enough to pay the tuition. However, remember, a fool is someone who is not only uninformed, but unwilling to learn and unwilling to change. So Proverbs 17:16 says, "Of what use is money in the hand of a fool, since he has no desire to get wisdom? What good does it do for him to pay the money? What good does it do for him to go to the school?" Well, as the chapter progresses, this fool is not smart enough to know this, so pays the money and goes into the classroom. But once in the classroom, he still doesn't learn. In fact, he sort of daydreams, looks out the window. Proverbs 17:24 says, "A discerning man keeps wisdom in view, but a fool's eyes wander to the ends of the earth." Fools are sad folk. They lack understanding, and they are unwilling to learn. Second key term, anger. Anger is emotional displeasure. It's the feelings that we get on the inside that relate to our interpretation of people and circumstances that are on the outside. It is a very, very, very powerful emotion. It can destroy a person from the inside out. Anger can be like rust that gets into the fenders of your Minnesota car. Very hard to stop once it's begun, until eventually it eats its way through to the surface on the outside and causes destruction and havoc. Anger can, in its simplest expression, change the look on a person's face and control the muscles until there's an intensity in the eyes and the lips and the rest of the face change. But anger is also capable of starting World War III. It is a very, very powerful emotion. The Hebrew word for anger is related to the Hebrew word for nostril. Now, there's an interesting couple of reasons for that. One is that the Hebrews thought that the physical location for anger was the nose. Now, we think, dumb, really dumb. Except if you were to bring some ancient Hebrew around and tell him that you love her with all of your heart, and then he were to say, "Yes, but I left my heart in San Francisco," I mean, they would think that we are even weirder than they are. So let's not make fun of the fact that they thought that their noses were angry. I think the other side of it is that if you watch the nose sometimes can be the point of expression of anger. So the nostrils become flared. And the nose makes the noise of anger. And so maybe it's a fitting analogy that they make when they say that that's what anger is all about. But understand that the Bible does not always depict anger as evil. That anger can come in two types. It can be good anger and bad anger. Jesus was angry, and yet he didn't sin. You remember the story where he went into the Jerusalem temple and he was irate because money changers had made it a commercial establishment instead of the house of prayer that it was intended to be, and he actually went and physically threw them out, turned their tables upside down, and chased them out the door. Repeatedly in Scripture, we find that God is angry, angry with sin and angry with sinners. Or we're told in Ephesians 4:26, "In your anger, do not sin," which of course says that it is possible to be angry but not to sin. So we need to further define the fool's anger here in the book of Proverbs. We need to expand our definition beyond emotional displeasure. So that here, we're talking about anger, emotional displeasure, that is triggered specifically by someone else, and particularly by someone else's attitudes or behavior that crosses the way we want things to be. Our internal values, our internal dreams. Let's suppose, for example, that you're driving out here on Interstate 494, and someone cuts you off, or speeds by at something significantly in excess of the speed limit. Now, you can become angry in two different ways. You can become angry in the sense that that person is breaking the law. You can become angry in that same sense that that person may be risking her or his own life, risking your life, risking the lives of other drivers who are out on the freeway at the same time. Or you can become personally angry in the sense that you're no longer in the lead at rush hour. You can become personally angry that your car can't keep up with the other car. You can become personally angry in a somewhat undefined way where it is perceived to be a put-down because you are no longer in control of what's happening and someone cutting you off or whizzing by or coming up behind you really close, somehow that crosses the values of the way you want life to be lived, and so you have this emotional displeasure, this frustration, this hostility toward someone else. Now, frankly, this is what describes most of the anger that we see. Often we feel put down on the inside because of the way the company's treated us. Or put down on the inside because of someone getting a divorce. Or put down on the inside because of the unwillingness of the IRS to renegotiate. Or we feel personally put out because God didn't do it our way. And we had it figured out. And we have a whole interpretation of life and of structure and the way we dreamed and the way those dreams are to come through, and God didn't come through. It's almost as if we have an internal structure of the way we want reality to become, and then other people have a different reality that they impose upon us, and we perceive what they say and do to be barriers that we then, with our emotional displeasure, seek to tear down. Now, this is big stuff in our society. I'd say there's so much anger out there that many times it's hard to pinpoint. Sometimes it seems as if someone's angry about this, but what the truth is they're really angry about that. And it's just coming out here. Perhaps this past winter you might have in your home had one of those irksome roof leaks that sometimes occur where there's a browning of the otherwise white tile or ceiling material. Or maybe even it's severe enough that there's a drip that during one of those thaws in January or February brings the snow turned to water through the ceiling of the north bedroom. And you can't do anything about it then. You can't go up and scrape all the snow and the ice off the roof. You have to live with it until the spring thaw occurs, sometimes bringing more water in. And then when it finally thaws out and heats up, you get up on the roof. And you put your ladder right by the north bedroom and crawl up that ladder and check out the shingles and look for where the leak is happening, where the water's coming in. And everything looks fine. There isn't a shingle broken. There isn't one missing or out of place. And then you really have to go on a hunt, and you discover that where the damage is not over the north bedroom, but over the south bathroom. That, in fact, the damage to the roof is on the other side of the house, and that the water is leaking in there, and then that the drip is running all the way across a rafter, and it's coming in a completely different place. And lots of times that happens with anger. Sometimes we can have enormous emotional displeasure one place, but for some reason are unable to express it or are able to keep it under control there. But it comes into the rafters of our lives and then comes out in some totally, totally different place. People are angry. Angry sometimes about a lifetime of not getting their way. Sometimes they've forgotten what they're angry about. They're frustrated with all the disappointments. And then the anger bursts out in some unexpected and often some very inappropriate time and way. The third key term to understand is wise. Now, the wise person is the contrasting person. The wise person is quite different. That's because she has understanding. In other words, she shares the perspective on life that God has and the perspective on reality. So she sees things the way God sees things, and she sees reality the way God sees reality. The wise man, well, he's not problem-free. People cut him off when he drives. People turn him off in relationships. People rip him off in business deals and in the relationships of life. So he has all these problems just as anybody else has problems. But he understands things differently. He understands that we live in a world of sinners. He understands that not everything is aimed at him personally. Sometimes the fool who is very angry thinks that everything is a personal issue, that everything is targeted as him, as a personality. But the wise man, he understands that God is in charge, that is true reality, and that God will handle the inequities and the injustices of life. Now, that's not to say that he becomes passive, because the wise man is not portrayed as a passive person. But he understands, in adopting the knowledge of God and the perspective of God, what is appropriate and what is inappropriate in ways to respond to that constant stream of threats to his internal system and values. To again quote Proverbs 13:16, every prudent man, that's a synonym for the wise man, every prudent man acts out of knowledge. Not out of emotion, but out of knowledge. But even if the wise person doesn't understand, he or she seeks to learn. So don't think that the wise person is someone who has it all figured out. The wise person is not someone who knows it all. Wisdom is as much a disposition of the mind toward life as it is a correct information about how to live life. That means that the wise person, back to Proverbs 17, isn't staring out the window. The wise person is evaluating life and absorbing knowledge that comes from God through all of the different channels that God directs toward that wise person in order to learn. Always asking, always open, always learning God's wise ways and then adopting them as his own. Fourth key term is control. And here, I suppose, outwardly at least, is the greatest contrast of all between the wise and the fool. It's in behavior. In fact, both of them may become angry. Please don't think that the wise person not only doesn't know it all, but the wise person also can become inappropriately angry. But the fool is one who quickly vents that anger. It comes out fast and often furiously. But the wise person is the person who keeps that anger and the frustrations of life, the response to the frustrations of life, under control. That means that the wise person is the person who is behaving on the basis of wisdom, whereas the foolish person behaving on the basis of emotion fits, again, some more Proverbs. Proverbs 14:16 says, a wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is a hothead and is reckless. Proverbs 12:16, a fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. So the wise person takes a look at what's happening, and then he compares it to the standard of God's wisdom. And his control is that he is adjusting his response to the circumstances around him to fit with the standard of the way God says appropriate behavior ought to be lived out. If you get on 494 and you drive, the road sort of goes all different directions, but you drive north and then hit 94 west, you know that out there, I don't know, somewhere between Maple Grove and Rogers, the speed limit changes. So we go from the federal urban maximum speed limit of 55 to the federal rural maximum speed limit of 65. Except if you set your cruise control on 55 miles per hour and you go up 494 and get onto 94, where it's still 55, you will sense something happening with all the cars around you. They start going faster and faster and faster, even though the speed limit is still 55. And that sort of brings the dormant race car driver in you out. And you internally rationalize this. Now, I don't know this from experience. I'm sure someone else must have told this to me. You shut off the cruise control and say, well, you know, it's about time that I manually operate this car. I need to keep up my hours. And you realize that with the slightest pressure, with just your big toe, you can press down ever so slightly on that accelerator, and it'll go up to 60, because the power's there. In fact, to 65, In fact, and this, I assure you, is totally from other people's experience, 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, the power's there under the hood to drive that faster speed. The question is whether or not you as the driver will use that power in accordance with the posted standard of 55 or 65. And that's what the wise person does in the travel lanes of life. The wise person has the power to blow up. The wise person has the power to be obnoxious. The wise person has the power to do all the same things that the fool does. But the wise person keeps that power under control so that the power is used to maintain conformity to the standards of God in the wisdom that he calls us to. Vernon Grounds is a lifelong friend and a former teacher of mine who tells an interesting story about a very strong and a very violent man, a guy who was the big kid on the block when he was a boy and became the big man everywhere when he was full grown. Someone who learned early in life that he was strong enough to make mush out of the faces of people who he didn't like or who crossed him, and who had a biography that was written with him pretty much smashing people's faces in. Whenever someone didn't do it his way, whenever he was crossed, whenever he was frustrated, he had that emotional displeasure that was vented, given full vent, until he hurt other people all the time. And then there was a great change in his life when he became a Christian. He heard about Jesus Christ and that Jesus Christ had died on the cross to save him from sin. And so he made a commitment to Jesus Christ. But you know, even though he became a Christian, his knuckles did not become softer. And his muscles were no less capable of smashing a face in. And the power and the tradition of the venting of anger did not immediately nor easily go away. But he was a wise man in that he wanted to learn not only God's perspective, but God's control. And so he went to his pastor, who gave what I consider to be some interesting and wise counsel. His pastor gave to him a small wooden cross and told him to put it in his pocket, and that whenever he would face those situations where he was going to give full vent to anger, to put his hand in that pocket and to clutch that cross and to pray. To pray that the Jesus who died on the cross, not only to give him salvation, but to give him control, would give him at that moment the wisdom and the control to behave in a Christian way and an appropriate way. And so the man did it. Now, I have to tell you, he crushed a number of crosses in the process of living life and had to get new crosses because he left a whole string of splinters behind in his pockets. But eventually he was transformed from foolishness to wisdom by the grace of God. And so the proverb on the top side and the bottom side became his proverb. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control.